Welcome to the Oversoul Shaman King podcast. I am V-Lord GTZ, and with me I have my usual co-hosts, Marion and Sakaki.
What's crack-a-lackin'?
Yo, I'm feeling the soul.
I'm sure we all are. I mean, your soul always gets invigorated once you read a good old Shaman King volume.
True.
Yeah, and today we're talking about volumes 6 and 7 of Shaman King, which have some nice meaty beats of action, really. It's a lot of fighting, which is kind of nice.
It's true. Like, we've had a couple of volumes with some fights in them, but this is like our first one where it's mainly one fight.
Yeah, I mean, especially in volume 7. Like, boy, that's like the least amount of dialogue I've seen in Shaman King so far.
It's interesting to think about, because like you would think with a series where it's about a shaman fight that there'd be a lot less dialogue, but Shaman King, as far as Shonen goes, seems to be pretty dialogue dense.
Yeah, I mean, especially I guess early on, I feel. As the series kind of gets into the like more later half, Takei definitely starts having a more kind of like art-heavy approach to his chapters, where like there will be like a fair bit of dialogue, but it'll be kind of spliced in with a lot of more silent just spreads and just silent panels. So you kind of see that approach kind of seeping in to these volumes.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say they're like totally like mostly action, but like a lot of the actual text was like the typical like battle commentary that we get from the side characters.
Yeah,
definitely. But going into volume 6 first, though, we got to the conclusion of the battle with Faust, and we kind of talked a lot about that fight in our previous episode, but we did kind of end off with a bit of a proper backstory for Faust and, like, kind of his relationship with his partner. And I always find that kind of backstory pretty interesting because, like, it's kind of the expected, like, oh, it's this tragic story of Faust and his lover and him going to the quote-unquote dark side of necromancy. But it works surprisingly well for how over-the-top of a character Faust is. Like, you actually kind of feel sympathetic for him, even though he's kind of just a crazy person.
I mean, this might be weird for me to say, but it's almost like, I'm trying to think of a way to put it. I don't want to minimize his, like, backstory, because it's good for what it is, but it almost feels like it's very fast, I guess. It's like, he meets the girl, he falls in love, they're happy, then she gets shot, and here we are. I mean, it just feels like, I get that probably Takei's point was just like, okay, Faust, I don't want to make it sound like he's just like, yeah, this guy needs a backstory, let me throw in one, and okay, let's get back to fighting, that's it. But it just feels interestingly like, you would think, I guess there'd be more, I don't know, development or something? But I get at the same time, you don't want to spend too long on, you know, developing his character, because as we've seen with Faust, he's, you know, we already kind of get what his character is about and what he's there for just from his actions and his words. So we don't really need like a multi-chapter flashback. You know, I guess I'm stepping on my own feet here by saying this. Like, I'm not saying I want more, but it just felt like there should have been more, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the point is kind of like, okay, Faust's story has kind of been seen and done a bunch, so like there's not a ton of reason to dwell on it. Though, yeah, yeah. I guess like for this part of the story, it's kind of just more of an afterthought where it's just like, oh yeah, here's a quick little backstory for you to feel sad for him, and now the end, fight's over, move on.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, that's the feeling I got from it. Although, like, Mini Faust and Mini Eliza were both adorable. Like, I just have to throw that out there. But, yeah, it did just feel like, okay, you know, this is the kind of backstory you've seen in a million other shonen. Here you go. Here it is one more time. All right. You're good? All right, let's go. We're back to, you know, now back to our feature presentation.
Yeah, back to our feature presentation where the Chad Tao Ren comes in and just, like, whoops Voss ass. Like, Ren really makes a flashy entrance there.
He does. Like, he does. Though, I think one thing that we can't gloss over too much here is the fact that Yo himself straight up says, you know, for the first time I know defeat. Which is, I mean, as far as the Shonen tradition goes, that's really big character development.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's interesting that, like, at this point, basically, everyone has had, like, a loss at this point except Faust. Like, for like, an action shonen, like, we don't really see that often. Like, Ren lost a fight, Yo just lost a fight, and Horohoro, seeing how prominent he is in, like, Color Spreads, he's obviously going to be a main character, too. He also had a loss.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I think one interesting thing about Shaman King is definitely shows, like, how these characters kind of deal with loss. And, like, yeah, you definitely see some of them rebound a lot better than others. Like, you can see that parallel with, like, say, Yo and Ren, where Ren's way to, quote-unquote, recovery after loss is probably a bit more unhealthy than kind of Yo's kind of more traditional approach of kind of, like, getting stronger and kind of learning from mistakes and, like, understanding his motivations, which is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that one. Like, and I hadn't actually thought about that until Marion pointed out, but yeah, everybody has had not a significant loss, I wouldn't say, but as far as the series goes, like, this we're only 6 volumes in, and we're already seeing that all of these characters are already taking L like this. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Hunter x Hunter, where it's like, when you think about it, Gon has only ever won, like, one fight straight up, which is in Greed Island. And even then, he, like, did it in a very, very, like, I mean, they gave him a clear plan, and he was like, nah, I'm gonna just do my thing. Lose a fucking arm here. That's okay. Got this. So, it's just an interesting, thing with Shaman King, where it's like, especially since, I just think it's significant with Yo, like, outright admitting, you know, I know the agony of defeat now, because up until now, you would think he's the kind of guy where it's just like, oh, I got defeated, oh, that's, well, I'm gonna go see what's on TV, but it's like, definitely his bond with Monta not only caused him to go, like, berserker, but then, you know, also realize, crap, you know, if I want to get to be Shaman King or anything like that, I mean, yes, of course, I'm the kind of guy that wants to be laid back and, you know, not bothered by much. But at the same time, if I want to reach my goal, I may have to actually put a little bit more effort. Not effort, but I have to take this a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, because, like, yeah, it's kind of like the Hunter x Hunter, like, comparison there. It's, in Shaman King, there's not really this need to have the, necessarily the main characters or kind of the central characters always win. Like, there's kind of an up and down there where, like, it's less about who actually wins the fight and more about who comes away with the most value or, like, knowledge from the fight.
Yeah,
who grows more from it.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's kind of seeing here where, like, I feel even though Yo lost against Voss, he kind of learned more than Voss did.
Definitely. And I think this, like, led to one of my favorite moments so far, which is right after, when, like, Yo is really, like, reeling from the loss, and Amidamaru is like, yeah, well, you have something that you actually care about now. And, like, that shift in, like, mentality for Yo is really interesting, because, like we've said, like, up to this point, he's been really laid back. He doesn't, like, care much about stuff. He mostly, like, just takes life as it comes, but, like, now that he has, like, an actual goal and something that he cares about, that's what's going to drive his growth from now on.
It's interesting to consider that he doesn't, I mean, well, this isn't much of a spoiler, but, like, he doesn't become a totally different character from this either. Because, you know, when you see this kind of thing in the show, it's usually maybe the character up until now has been carefree. Like, they've been a Yo. And then after all of this happens to them, they come back out as a completely different character who's serious and takes everything seriously. But no, one thing I will say about Takei is, like, Yo is a very, it's I like his character development because he's both a static character, but also one that sees growth. He's not like, he manages to balance that out where it's not like, oh man, where's the Yo from volumes 1 through 5? This guy, I don't know who this guy is. But at the same time, it's not like, well, I mean, he got his ass whooped. You think he learned from it, but he's still doing the same thing, you know?
Yeah, we see that in the next fight too, but like, it's just, he takes his growth, he like, I don't know how to say this, like, I think Silva, or is either Silva or one of the spirit guardians say that, like, what really matters in a shaman fight is wisdom, and Yo takes, like, the lessons that he learns from his fights, and, like, how he grows with each fight, and, like, applies them to, like, how he is as a person, and that's what leads to, like, him growing stronger, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, I think, like, part of it's, like, what Yo's real growth from the Foss fight is kind of being true to himself and not kind of trying to kind of deny, like, oh, like, I just don't care about anything. It's more of the fact, like, yeah, I want a relaxing life, but there are still things I care about. I'm not detached from the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, it's the difference between him, like, being laid back or whatever, and wanting to be kind of, like, hands-off, but it's like skirting the line between that and being, like, a nihilist or something.
Exactly. And after the whole kind of Foss conflict, we kind of shift over to another backstory, which is kind of for Manta.
Oh, yeah.
We finally learn more about Manta, outside of him just being a straight man. And apparently he's loaded.
Yeah, I feel like that was, if that wasn't outright said before, I feel like it was alluded to, or maybe I'm just thinking of something else, but
it was definitely alluded to. I don't think they straight up said, like, yeah, Manta's rolling in the dough.
Although, and I love that they have the whole aesthetic, his whole family aesthetic is like him and his dad and his sister are like munchkins, and then his mom is like the statuesque stunner. And it's just, I don't know, that always makes me laugh. That where Manlets, it's like, rise up. Say what?
Manlets rise up.
Yeah. Oh my god. Like, his sister literally just looks like a mini Manta.
And I mean, his dad looks like probably what he'll look like when he gets to that age. They all look the same, and then his mom is just like, what? It just makes me laugh whenever you had that relationship, like the really, the plain looking parent, and then like the hot parent, or like you were just wondering to yourself, how did these two meet? I would love to read that.
I can't believe that Monta's parents are the mayor and Miss Bellum.
Oh no.
It works because his sister does look like a Powerpuff Girl.
Oh, Mary, why?
Oh my god. I love it.
I literally just thought of it.
Oh my god, though. But you know, the problem with that is then if they, in the remake, that means that his Manta's mom won't be in it. Because you know, they took Miss
Bellum. Now you made me sad, Sakaki.
They took out Miss Bellum in the Powerpuff Girls remake, so.
Anyways, so yeah, Manta's in the hospital. His fam's not exactly happy that he's hanging out with delinquents like Yo.
The witch doctor family.
Yeah, the witch doctors. Yeah, so they want him to go home with them.
Man, Manta, if you're going to hang out with delinquents, why don't you hang out with Yotaro? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so Manta's kind of resistant to all that. He's like, nah, I want to chill with Yo. But Yo doesn't necessarily want Manta to get hurt, so he pretends to not care about Manta anymore. And Manta runs away, crying. He made Manta sad. That makes me sad.
You would think that, you know, Manta would have already seen through this because Yo did this to him on Chapter 1.
Yeah, you think so.
Like, he did, it's the exact same thing where he was just like, ghost? I don't know, ghost, bro. You need to calm down with that. And he just did it again.
I think the moral of the story here is Manta's just gullible.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly changes his decision later, because once he gets to the airport, he's just like, wait, I'm gonna go back, screw this. You all suck, fam.
He just gets to America. Wait a minute.
He starts having a brain blast in his head.
Actually, y'all kind of dumb.
Also, just a small thing. I'm assuming this is how it was in the Viz translation, since there aren't any differences. But the way his sister talks, like the Elmer Fudd thing, it's just. I don't know. That just it, no, no. We compared it to a Powerpuff Girl, but she's fucking Elmira from like Tiny Toon Adventures, and that's what came to mind when I was reading the way she was talking in the one panel where she has like where she's kind of telling Manta's mom about he wants to stay with his friend.
Yeah, I double checked right now. Yeah, it's the same. They used friend
and Pway together. But anyway, yeah, like, yeah, his folks are worried about him in their way, and then he's just like, oh, well, no, Yo's my buddy, and Yo's like, nah, I ain't about that life, man. I'm about the afterlife.
The real life.
I'm sorry.
I almost forgot what I was going to say.
Following this, like, Yo realizes, hey, I have to get stronger, so he decides to go home to Izumo, where apparently, to get stronger, he has to die.
Yeah, didn't you read Dragon Ball, V-Lord? Every time they come back from the brink, their Saiyan cells just explode.
So Shaman King is Zenkai Boost. Everything makes sense now.
Exactly.
I mean, to be fair, you know, they deal with ghosts and stuff all the time. It's the shonen thing. Everybody does it. It's the rite of passage in the shonen series. It's like, you know, can you imagine just after all of these serializations end, like they go to the club and there's this one shonen character who's like, guys, I got stronger by doing hard work and training and believing in my friends. Loser. I died twice. He's a weakling. I came close to death once or twice myself. Guys, maybe you're the problem. Maybe we shouldn't have to die to get stronger. And they all look at this new guy and are like, what the fuck's wrong with him?
It is interesting, though, because, like, unlike your kind of usual training arc, it's literally just Yo going to a cave, and then we come out and we see him stronger.
That's funny. We didn't see anything about...
Yeah, like, we don't see anything about what happens in the cave.
My kind of training arc.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it ties in who Yo is with the character and what Shaman King's themes are, which is, I mean, we've mentioned it before that it's not so much about that fighting is, I won't say wrong, but like it isn't the only answer. So it makes sense to have a training arc where instead of it being fighting against a stronger foe or doing strenuous, you know, exercise or whatever, that instead it's just, hey guys, I'm just going to go hang in this cave and think about things for a minute. Be right back.
And you think he's going to dramatically chain the cave, but nah, he's just the same.
It's just like, yo, he didn't come back out with giant yellow glowing hair. So what kind of training arc was it?
He doesn't have any scars, not a new outfit. He's just chilling in that one shirt that looks like it has that weed leaf on it.
Yes. Yes, I saw that. I'm like, yep, that's Yo.
Yo smokes weed every day, guys. As you'd expect, the Viz release does not have the weed symbol.
Hashtag censorship.
They weren't blazing it. But it's okay, because it's a digital release, so we don't have to blaze it to blaze it.
We're going to print it out and then blaze it.
Yo, so, like, yeah, when we're done with the Silver Soul podcast someday... We're just going to invite all our listeners to come in, and we're just going to burn Shaman King volume, smoke them.
Oh, no.
It'll be like the bleach thing, except we'll be getting higher instead of lower.
Oh, that would not be good for my asthma, but I would totally.
we have a blunt, roll one out for Take.
Oh, God.
But... Let's talk about the most important thing in this volume, though. Our buddy Ryu.
Yes,
Ryu. I was gonna say, like, that whole family thing with Manta was kind of like, damn, your family kind of sucks. But, like, it leads flawlessly into the next segment where it's like, all right, let's go on a fucking road trip with Ryu.
Yeah, Ryu's journey to just find things to do. Because initially he wants to be a sushi chef in America for some reason.
That sounds about right.
But then he's chilling with Monta. He's like, oh, you're going to go find Yo? I'll just chill with you. That sounds fun.
I like that his reasoning for Shaman King is like, you know, sushi chef, shaman, same diff, right?
Yeah, exactly. I love the one chapter cover too, where it's like a depiction of him being in America and just him shirtless looking like a badass in the middle of the road.
Yes, chapter 49.
It looks like another freaking, it looks like it could be a music album cover or something.
Was that page redrawn, Wheeler?
It was not.
Nice.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, that's actually really, because it looks like we're reaching the point where Takei's art is beginning to slowly change into what it is now. I feel like not like super. Say what?
Not completely, but we get the hints of it. Like
yeah. No, I'm saying information, but it's beginning to kind of that, you know, slow transition, which makes sense. He's been around this time. He would have been drawing the series for a year. So, you know, and as time goes by, artists are looking for ways of getting the same result, but more efficiently, so.
Yeah, and admittedly, I read these chapters pretty fast, but, like, just cross-referencing with the Viz release as it was going, I didn't see that many changes this time around. Like, the only big one I really noticed was, like, the Viz release not having Yo promoting the weeds, but... Otherwise, yeah, it seemed like at this point Takei is more satisfied with what he had originally drawn, which makes sense because most of his character designs are kind of reaching kind of their more normal form at this point anyways.
Yeah, I agree with that. Also, yeah, also I'm looking at like Monta, and you know, Ryu's like telling Monta to get on this bike, and his helmet has a place for his hair, and that's the most amazing thing ever.
You gotta protect the dew.
Yeah, I mean, that beautiful heart-shaped dew.
I love the fact that, like, is it later on in this volume where he meets Tamao, where his, like, the part of his hair that's, like, growing, like, falls off?
Yeah, like, it's wiggling, and Tamao thinks that's perverted, so he attacks
him. Ryu's lewd hair.
He's too lewd for this pure manga.
I mean, but this also the introduction of Pochi and Kochi, I think their names are?
Pochi and Kochi.
Yeah.
Yes. Ren and Stimpy, yes. Ren and Stimpy, but with like 100% more balls if you're
Renchi reading and Stimpy original. And Stinchy. That's
even better. We're just hitting up all the Cartoon Network and Nicktoons now.
It is interesting to kind of see, like, Punchy and Kunchy and Tamao's introduction here, because, like, if I recall, Tamao was on the initial, like, first chapter color spread, and even though Tamao doesn't do a ton in the series, it definitely seems like Takei liked her quite a bit, because, like, we even have, like, the little bonus chapters at the end of, like, this volume and volume 7, with, like, the Tamao Kokori, like, the Angel Cupid.
Yeah, I think he has a thing for, what's it called? Unrequited love types.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and I do kind of like Tamao's, like, small little backstory here, where it's like, oh, I've been admiring, like, Yo from afar, and I just want to, like, make sure, like, he's safe, even though, like, obviously, Anna's got that hook, line, and sinkered right there, so.
Yeah, I really like that about her, too. Like, there's no sense of, like, what's the word? I mean, in another series, there'd be, like, this whole back and forth between them of who gets him.
We never shaman.
But, yeah, in this, it's just, she knows. I don't think I'm overstepping my bounds by saying she knows that Yo is Anna's property. So,
I mean, Anna comes out with the shank, and she's just like, yeah, stay like 100 feet away. You aren't getting near here.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I don't even think. No, Velor. I don't even. Again, everybody just knows that whole sequence that you just outlined. That would be a sense show of insecurity. Anna doesn't have insecurity. She doesn't know what that means.
Yeah, I mean, considering she just literally shows up, they're all afraid. It's just like, yeah, Anna's got the leverage there.
Yeah, she just shows up there, but I do like that Tamal's like she's. She has these feelings for Yo, and she knows she can't act on him, but there's no sense of, like, friction. It's just, that's just the way it is. I can still care about him in my even if I can't care about him in the way I'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, obviously, like, punching Koji's balls aren't there. Yeah. Because we can't get that pure ball goodness.
SMH. They should, do you guys know if in the anime, when they show up, they do, like, that, the Tanuki, like, boom sound effect?
They do not, as far as I know. I mean, I'll have to check that out.
Didn't they just remove the balls in the anime?
Yeah, they did. They did. That I
That's fine, as long as they keep the sound effect of when they, like, slap their belly and it's like, boom.
No, okay, I know what you're talking about, yeah. No, as far as I remember, they didn't make that sound, but I'll have to check. I only watched maybe the first core last time I watched the anime, and I haven't watched more since. So
that's a damn shame.
Clearly, we need to do a series of OG anime watch episodes.
Yeah, we really should. Like, I'm actually really surprised at how much I actually like the old anime, despite its, you know, shortcomings. Which is, I mean, most of those shortcomings could be just chalked up to the fact that it existed during the time it did, because yeah. that was definitely anime's gangly teenage years. So,
oh no, was it Digipaint era?
Yep.
Yeah, oh, no. Good old Digipaint. We all love that.
Not that aspect ratio.
That enhanced definition.
Yeah, that is, you know, that's what I like to call the years where anime was still through puberty, so.
I remember Digipaint Conan. Those were bad times.
Oh, don't talk about those, please.
The best episode, Sakaki.
No, it's not. I mean, you know it's bad when the director of Fullmetal Alchemist 2003 couldn't save the anime. Like, he did his best, though. He really did his best, though. But, yeah, like, I mean, going back to what we were just talking about, I'm just looking at this panel now where Tamal's talking to Anna, and Anna says, cool, I'm his wife, and you're his fan. And there you go. She outlined the whole relationship in a sentence.
Crazy.
And I love how Ami Damaru's just laughing like, you're going to be funny, LOL.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to like, yeah, I'm looking forward to this harem in like 20 years. So yeah, Yo comes out of the cave and stuff, and like, essentially at this point, it's all prep for the upcoming fight with Ren. And we get to see, like, Yo's kind of new oversoul, which is super dope. It has, like, a little armor, and Amidamaru can finally talk while they're in oversoul mode. So, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it looks better than the last one.
I mean, I still like the last one, but this one is better.
I mean, I just, all I can do is think about just Marion saying Ninja Turtle look, and that's all that's in my head.
It's literally Ninja Turtle.
Okay, but who doesn't like the Ninja Turtles? I mean, come on.
It does, but I never thought about that until very excited. And now that's all I can think about when I see it.
I mean, luckily we won't have to deal with Teenage Mutant Ninja Yo anymore, so.
Or Stain from, like, MHA. I mean, but now I associate them both with Ninja Turtles, and it's really bad.
Holy shit.
Oh, God.
I can't hear Mary realizing this now, too. Although I feel like in MHA, that was probably more of an intentional reference.
Oh, yeah, for sure. God, he's like Raphael. I hate it.
But yeah. I'm sorry I ruined Stain for everybody. If I'm ever on the MHA podcast, I'll apologize to everybody if I'm ever invited to that podcast.
Sakaki for MHA pod. He'll go on to every podcast one by one and ruin them. That'll be his way of taking down Shonen Jump.
I'll ruin them by mentioning Ninja Turtles. That's how I'm gonna do it.
You mention Ninja Turtles, plant the seed of Sunday, and then disappear into the distance.
Yo, that sounds like me. Yep, that's it. I'm gonna ride off in the sun into the Sunday set. Yes.
But moving on, like while Yo's powering up, Ren is also powering up. He's been training and stuff, and they explain properly that, like, yeah, that badass horse he has now, it has the soul of, like, Basin's old steed, because apparently when you have a horse, you fight better.
Yeah, didn't you read JoJo Part 7?
Oh my god, it's Steel Ball, bro.
Stop!
You can't tell me that's not what this is.
But did they really fight better with the horses in Steel Ball Run?
God, okay.
Oversold is our stands, I'm telling you.
But the horses weren't stands. They were just random horses.
No, the horse has a stand.
I mean, Araki hasn't done it yet, so at some point, I mean, if he could give an orangutan a boat as a stand, I do feel like at some point a horse is going to have a stand.
Honestly, I'm surprised none of the horses in Steel Ball Run had stands. That probably would have made it incredibly stupid, but by the bar that JoJo's already at, that wouldn't be too much different.
Yeah, I think
Felor, you miss said fabulous. I mean, it's okay. Sometimes,
I mean, it's also fabulous, but that's a given.
Okay.
I mean, who doesn't love the fabulous Dio the dinosaur? Barney needs to get out of the way. We're replacing him with Dio.
I forgot that happened. But yeah, so yeah, Ren having a horsey.
Yeah.
And this one badass looking horse too.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Oh shit. Guys, we jumped straight into the next volume, I think.
Well, yeah, we finished the last volume.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, no, we were
say something about the road trip because I really like that part.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I think that was like the most endearing I've ever seen Ryu. Like, and that's saying a lot because his whole volume with Tokagero, that was really inspiring stuff. But then him talking about like his happy places and like how that's how you find like what you want to do in the future and stuff was like a really good conversation for both, like, Manta, like, learning, like, realizing that he doesn't want to, like, follow his family's footsteps or whatever. And, like, what he really cares about and stuff. Like, I think that's a good kind of conversation to have in, like, shonen manga. Because, yeah, like, a lot of this stuff is about, like, dreams and stuff and, like, following what you want to be, etc. But, like, there's never really that often like conversations about like what do you do when you're like impeded by something or like your circumstances like don't line up with what you want to do or whatever. But like I think the advice that he gives to Manta is really good, and it's something that people can like take to heart in real life too. So that was a really heartwarming conversation.
Honestly, like Ryu really kind of embraces the themes of Shaman King in a way, because it's like him going with the flow at this point. Because initially, like, yeah, he wants to go to America to be a sushi chef. But then once Manta mentions that, like, oh, hey, I'm going to go see Yo, he's like, huh, maybe I should be a shaman instead.
I mean, piggyback, yeah. I just love that too. And as Marion said, he's already incredibly likable. Then you add this extra layer to him. And it's like, because up until now, Best Place has been kind of taken as a joke. Like, I mean, not really a joke per se, but it's not. We haven't had a reason really to take it seriously other than the fact that Ryu really likes it. It's like, okay, we like Ryu, so whatever, we'll go with it. But him actually explaining it now, it's like, wow, this is way more profound. And piggybacking off of what Marion said, the demographic of people who would be reading this probably need that, you know? Like, this, as much as we love our shonen manga, it is primarily marketed to teenage boys. So definitely, this is the kind of advice I would have liked to have. At that, when I was about the age of, you know, the intended audience for this, I would have liked to hear that, you know, especially in something that I'm enjoying reading. I mean, it's one thing to hear it from like an adult or a teacher or something. I was like, and I ain't taking you seriously, but to read it in, like, I'm already enjoying Shaman, you know, if I'm like a Japanese kid reading this or whatever, or even an American kid. But yeah, I'm already enjoying Shaman King. Then to hear this from something I'm enjoying, it resonates more than hearing it from an adult or you know, after school special or some shit like that.
Relationship ended with dad. Shaman King is a new dad now.
God.
Are there any good dads in Shaman King, though?
Yo's dad's pretty okay.
Okay. I mean, we don't get to see him much now, but yeah, he's pretty decent.
But I mean, speaking of bad dads, we get introduced to Tao Ren's dad, and we learn that the biggest thing of all, he's thick.
He looks like a fucking, like a Sato picture.
Oh my god! Yeah, but I mean, he's so thick that he can hold a panda in his lap. That's peak thick right there.
Right, like, god, yeah, I'm just looking at it. This is actually one of my, I don't know if I've ever said it, but this is actually one of my favorite arcs. Like,
oh, really?
I really like the arc of them going to kind of rescue, well,
oh, the Ren rescue arc?
Yeah. It's my favorite arc because it's reminiscent, and we're going back to Hunter Hunter. Same thing with Killua, when he went back home. And
I literally got that vibe once we saw like the family dynamic after like June comes to visit or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, there's this family, they're very powerful or whatever, but they're also like secluded. They obviously have like different, they have like different goals and different like modus operandi than like the Zoldyck do, but like the parallels are there. And the way that like the patriarch of the Tao family is just kind of like throws his weight around in order to like get what he wants and stuff is yeah, like typical bad guy stuff, but also like it sets up what I think is like really impactful is like the end of the volume, once you see like June like pleading with him that like, oh, like he's really a kind boy at heart or whatever. He's obviously like suffering or whatever. And it goes back to the statement that Yo says at the very beginning that like people who see spirits aren't inherently bad people. Even though like Ren is like kind of warped from his upbringing and like his responsibility as being like the, I guess like the next head of the family. He's still good and deep down.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to kind of the whole motivation of the Tao family, where it's all this, like, them wanting power as, like, revenge against them being shunned by, like, other shaman families. And it's like, Ren isn't invested in that revenge. He just sees it as this endless cycle. And despite that, he's still kind of trapped in that same cycle, because he can't get free of, like, what his family wants. Like, he's been placed in a position where he has to take on all the burden of the Tao family. And yeah, it's kind of just like he's a victim of circumstance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn, I can't believe Ren is Vegeta.
Oh my god.
Does that mean
oh no.
I mean, but yeah, going back to what I was saying, like, my favorite character in Hunter x Hunter is Killua, so seeing the different kind of ways that these arcs are handled is really interesting to me, too, because, again, Killua's kind of the prodigy of his family as well, so, and you have Ren, that's kind of the same thing, although their circumstances are different, since Ren is, I guess, openly trying to rebel against his family, even though he can't. At the same time, like, he realizes what's going on, and they both have that in common, too. But it's like, whereas Killua was kind of, like, openly, like, I'm not down for this. I mean, he's kind of, I won't say subservient, but he listens to his dad. But that's about it. Everybody else in the family is like, whatever. Once his dad stays cool with him leaving, he leaves. But, like, Tao Ren, on Tao Ren's side of things, like, it's a thing where he wants to manifest his own destiny, but like he has that, I don't know. I guess it's like, I don't want to say so much fear of his dad, but I don't know what you would call it. So definitely seeing that dynamic play out differently in Shaman King is really interesting. Or the fact that in Hunter x Hunter, they went there to rescue Killua, but there wasn't really much of a rescue. It was more like they showed up there and he was like, oh yeah, guys, let's go. And that was it. Whereas in this arc, it plays out more straightforwardly as like a normal shonen thing where they come there and they save him.
Yeah. And we can definitely get more into that when we get to those proper volumes, but it's definitely, right. I think, one of my favorite arcs too. Like it's really nice.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. And again, I try not to spoil too much, but like it definitely, when I say plays out in a typical shonen fashion, it's still very much Shaman King and how it all ends.
Yeah.
I don't want to make it sound like it's some generic, like, oh, this is just another shonen. You could just skip that. No, it's still very much in line of what Shaman King is. Its themes are.
Yeah, what's that one song, like, Baby Let's Talk?
Huh?
I didn't look up the name of the song, but is this... That's, like, sums up Shaman King. It's like, let's talk it out, fam.
Yeah, that's it. That truly is it, honestly. I mean, most conflicts in the series...
Wow, good on Shaman King. Good on Shaman King for... Starting off the talk no jutsu.
Wait, okay, no, now I need to know. Like, okay, Shaman King started first, or before Naruto, obviously. Like, because they all started, like, consecutively. It was One Piece, then Shaman King, and Naruto, right?
I think so. Let's check the...
Yeah, because they were 99... They're all 99, I think.
Naruto was 99. Shaman King was 98.
Oh, pause.
So, yeah. So, I did remember something.
Takei's that got that trademark on Talk No Jutsu.
Exactly. Also, some of the artwork in, like, Ren and Shio's fight is pretty top-notch, but, like...
Oh, I love the color page of him and Basan in the... They're, like, that pose with, like... Is it like I forgot because it's been like a few hours since I read it.
Yeah, it's chapter 58.
Yeah, chapter 58. Display of power.
I forgot what was in the background. Was it like his house or something?
I believe it is, I think.
It might be. I'm pretty sure. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, because it's like surrounded by the same mountains that I think the Tao household is surrounded by. So yeah, it's probably the house. But nah, it looks super dope. And yeah, like we mentioned before, like the majority of Volume 7 is literally just the Ren versus Yo fight, and it's like really badass.
Can I complain about one thing, actually?
Yeah, sure.
I think I know what you're gonna say.
Really?
Go ahead. I said I hope I know. I think I know what you're gonna say, but go ahead.
Alright. This is coming from someone who's like, I read a lot of trash. I read a lot of stuff that's not like quote-unquote objectively good, or whatever the fuck that means. I read a lot of, like, isekai and, like, VR MMO, like, light novels and stuff, so, like, I'm no stranger to, like, really basic stuff, but when they started incorporating, like, oh, wow, the Oracle Pager has the power to, like, quantify all of their powers into numbers, and it's like, wow, his ghost level is, like, 700, but then, like, oh, he's losing energy as he fights and whatever. It's just like the quantifying of it into numbers is so fucking like, oh, I don't want to see that shit. Like, with Silva, like gauging the fight and like, wow, Yo has so much less mana put into his oversoul. But how does that let him like break Ren's oversoul when it's so much bigger or whatever? And it's just like it really kills the tension for me, because I don't know, it comes off really like kind of like artificially trying to like bring up the stakes by like pointing out how obviously like in someone's favor the situation is at whatever certain point. It's like whenever they brought up like scouters in Dragon Ball, and it's just like, yeah, dude, I don't know what the fuck like 900 spirit power means. Like, just show me the fight, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think like for me, it doesn't bother me too much, simply because like after this fight, it's not really important at all. It's kind of like Scouters in that way, where like the whole joke of Scouters is that they really didn't matter.
Yeah. I know. It's just like, then why bother bringing them up?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, it's one of those ideas, I think, where Takei tries it out and it's like, nah, this doesn't really work, and we're going to throw it back in the trash.
Yeah, I just think it's so clunky because, aside from that, like, everything else is so top-notch in terms of execution that it's just like, man, you really had to throw that at the wall to see if it stuck or not, huh?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess the one thing I like here is not, like, obviously, like, oh, the larger number wins. It's like, it's still kind of going back to the point where it's like, nah, it's the numbers don't really matter. It's how they're actually using their powers that matter. But quantifying that just feels unnecessary.
I mean,
Takei is just like, I have to give somebody. I have to get these trolls on.
You know what? I'm gonna give Takei a soft pass and just be like, hey, he had to give Silva some kind of like conversational point to continue that whole thing with like the Goldva was like, you have to be impartial, so you have to root for Red now, and that's like his way of doing it. So like, all right, yeah, okay, I'll believe you. He just he modded his Oracle pager to look at fucking numbers.
He's like, you can also get ringtones and everything with the newest patch. It's just like, my god. I also love how when they bring up Chrome again, they say, like, Chrome, the one who loves to dance and sing.
Yes!
It's like, it's so like, random.
I was like, that's exactly what Beeler said.
You just have to say his name.
God. Did you know they named also Chrome after him?
Oh my god.
Considering all they keep saying about the Oracle pagers, I'm ready to say that the patch invented Google. So that makes sense. In his honor, they named their new OS after their fallen comrade.
God.
Okay, but I'm sorry, but I'm looking at page 84 and I don't know if you guys know the mem, like anyway, the meme where it's like, I guess dudes or people wearing oversized jackets. I can't unsee that with Tao Ren on page 84. Like the really huge, it's the collar. It's driving me crazy.
I thought of that too when.
Oh, good. That's what I thought. That was what you were going to say. That's what I was like. Oh, I know, but I mean, I also agree with you on the giving it and quantifying it with numbers and everything, but yeah, no, that it's the collar. It's driving me crazy because like I just remember that meme of just people wearing extremely oversized coats and stuff, and that's all I could think of looking at Tao Ren on this page.
I was actually I thought of that, but like on a different picture. I think it was a title page or just like a one page panel of Amidamaru, and like we see that like his waist and like his like waistline and his hips are like much like slimmer than we're led to believe because of the outline of his clothes or whatever. And I'm just like, what? He has a Barbie hourglass shape? Like this whole time I thought he was like really big and thick, but like no, that's just he just has a giant coat. And I'm just like, I felt so betrayed, but then I was like Kombucha Girl where she's just like, because then like, you know, I think I can agree with the bimbofication of Amidamaru.
Oh my god, what? What?
I mean, at one point, it's funny because we were talking about another volume, like, where before the redraws, he was, like, skinny.
He still is.
But then, like, in the redraw, he's buff. And then I guess it was just another panel where Takei didn't feel like redrawing him again. He was like, all right, I'm done. He was better.
Yeah, looking. You know, Amidamaru's a spirit, so his body figure is fluid.
I buy that excuse. It's that other meme with Giorno. That's bullshit, but I believe it.
True.
Okay.
I mean, do we have anything else we want to mention about the fight? Like, I guess one thing for me is I do kind of like the solution that Yo comes up with against Ren, where it's like, yeah, you have a really giant oversoul there, but what if I just make my oversoul several times?
I fucking love that. And I don't know, like the whole approach of the fight where it's just like, oh, wow, Ren's oversoul is huge. And then it's just like, whoa, Ren's oversoul is getting huger. And it's like, to the point where it's like, it's a giant spear. And then like his, Basan's arms start materializing to do like a fucking, like a, I guess like a clap or like a double arm, like bash going downwards or whatever. And then like, we also see his tiny head from the top. I love like huge bodies with tiny ass fucking heads. It like just it looks very, very funny. Even though I know it's like it's not that funny like on purpose, but visually it's just good. I love that contrast. Stylistically, it's great, especially on that one. Was it the second to last chapter before the volume ended that you see like the horse stand and Basan, and it's just like that angle where he's like holding the spear and Ren is just like riding on the horse like it's a surfboard or something, and then Yo and Amidamaru's oversoul are just like holding the sword ready to receive their attack or whatever. It that's a really cool panel to end a chapter on.
The moral of the story, kids, is that size doesn't matter.
It's how you use it.
That's it. That's the title of this episode.
That's what Anna said.
Oh no!
No!
Oh, wait, yeah, I take it back. They're like, that was I forgot.
That's a low blow.
Literally.
Oh no!
It's crazy because on one of the, was it in the extra chapter or like before where there was a page of Ryu sleeping and he's just like. He's like in like pajama pants and like shirtless, and I'm just like, why did Takei draw his junk so big?
Wait, what?
Hold on. Why am I looking for this thing like a teenage girl?
Trust me. When you find it, I don't have my phone on me, so I can't look up the chapter.
Wait, right, where was this?
I forgot. Maybe it was when they reached the. Maybe when they reached Izumo, or I forgot. Ryu was asleep, and it's like one panel. Oh, he was posing in his sleep like a disco pose or whatever with his finger in the air. I forgot if it was volume 6 or 7. It's kind of fucked
we're
up.
We're really looking for this now. we're really looking. Okay, I'll look for this later. Because otherwise it's just I can't.
But yeah, I mean. As far as Volume 7 goes, though, like, the fight doesn't really finish up in this volume, but, like, essentially, Yo kind of has the winning edge by the end. And yeah, that's kind of where it leaves off. But overall, it's a really fun fight.
Yeah. I mean, it's to be expected from a fight between, you know, the protagonist and the rival up until now. Which I do have to also point out that it's, I mean, we're on Volume 7 and we've already got their rematch. Which is pretty interesting to think about, like, as far as the stakes of the series and where Takei plans on taking them. Because, you know, this is the kind of thing, usually, you know, even if it's not, like, it's the last fight of the series or whatever, even if it's there's still stuff that's gonna happen afterwards, it's still something you work towards. I mean, Yo's had 2 fights in the Shaman fight so far.
Oh, you know what's dope? I actually really like the build-up toward the end, where it's like Horohoro and like all the other people are like, wow, this is literally the last qualifying fight. Whoever doesn't qualify is not going to be in the running for Shaman King anymore. But then like we see like all the other people like, okay, let's start betting who's going to win or not. And we see all the people who get like, who have been hinted in all the like, color spread and shit, like the Hanagumi girls, how at one point. And I'm just like, oh yes, let me see how.
Yeah. And then, Joko's in one of them, and then yeah, the two guys whose names I forget, but like
these Bo's Beats. No,
yeah, those guys. Yeah,
they're not Bo's Beats. That's a different manga.
But yeah, so like a lot of foreshadowing here, like Even though we're only like a fifth of the way through Shaman King, there's still quite a bit.
Holy shit, we're a fifth?
Yeah, I mean, 35 volumes, volume 7.
Damn, I can't do math.
Yeah.
why do I work in a forest?
No. yeah, it's... I mean, I've said it before on the show, but I'm like... I'm actually on like volume 33 right now. So I'm two volumes away from finishing in a complete read of this, and I just don't want to.
You were on volume 33 just enjoying myself. 4 episodes ago.
Yeah, I haven't touched it since then. Like, I don't know what I was doing, but I had nothing else I could do. Oh yeah, that's right, I lost my internet. So I was using my cellular plan to read Shaman King. So nobody can accuse me of being his fake fan. I already paid Comixology to get the series, and I paid my cell phone provider to keep reading it. So because I had no other choice. So I like read a bunch of it in like a day or two. And now I'm this close to the end, I'm like, I don't want to see them go. But yeah, this is all me just saying that Shaman King's just a really easy read. I mean, as Vilar said, we're already 7 volumes in, and it feels like we're going through this really, really fast. But no, it's just Shaman King has that great pacing for going for it.
Yeah, I really like the fact that the volume 6 was more of a cooldown after the fight or whatever. Like the rest of the fight ended in like 1 or 2 chapters, and the rest of it was like cooldown. It did good, because then having the next fight take up the rest of the next volume was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like,
yeah, definitely. I guess this is a good stopping point if we don't have anything else.
Yeah. I mean, all I can say about these two volumes is it's really great to see these characters. We're getting the payoff of this character development right away for the leads, which, I mean, again, 7 volumes in, this feels like something you'd see double this amount for another series.
Yeah, I mean, Takei is definitely good at giving those, I think, short-term but, like, satisfying payoffs that kind of will still keep building, too, throughout the series, which, yeah, it's really nice.
Do you guys have any thoughts on the extra chapters?
Oh, yeah, so there was the one remix chapter in Volume 6, the third remix track, which was about, like, Faust, I think, one of his shaman fights was against what seems to be one of his apprentices. So it was kind of them going through, like, their ideology before, like, their actual battle, which is kind of interesting. But one thing that really strikes out to me with the remix tracks is the fact that, like, it's in Takei's more, quote-unquote, modern art style. Yeah, so it's hard adjusting at times.
Yeah. I remember we talked about this last time. Okay.
I was like, yo, Faust looks weird. And then I realized that's not Faust, because then on the next page we see him with his eyeshadow. And I'm like, oh yeah, that wasn't him.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we talked about, we're probably going to bring this up a lot. It's just the stark difference between these art styles is incredible. So I wouldn't be surprised or even upset at the fact if every time we drink up any of the remix tracks, we're just like, they look so different, because they do. Like, definitely, Takei went from, like, this very blocky kind of art style to this very wispy one. And it's interesting, because you usually don't... Usually there's... I won't say usually, but I'm not going to say so much that his art style changed as much as just his complete, like, approach to his aesthetic did.
Yeah. So, and to be fair, it kind of fits with the material of the story, with, like, the way it goes from, like, more, like you said, blocky to more kind of, like, smoother lines and stuff to, like, fit with, like, kind of how ghosts are kind of, like, not really rigid, I guess.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely very, very nice to behold, too. Not to say that his old art style wasn't, but I like that, I mean, you could, at first, and we mentioned this, too, that, you know, you could definitely tell that he and Oda, yes, that one, they were both, you know, under, they both worked together. And I kind of like that over time, he kind of became his own thing instead of being basically Diet Oda or Mashima. Yeah, I did Boneless it. I did Oda. Say that. Boneless. Yes, I said it. There you go. You can come. I'm ready. Ready. I'm wearing a Luffy t-shirt right now, and I'm ready, all you Mashima fans. Let's do this.
Oh my god.
But yeah, I like that, like, over time, Takei's, like, becomes his own recognizable artist. Like, if you look at early Shaman King, I mean, we've mentioned it before. Look at early Shaman King. It does look like early.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, but One Piece doesn't have stands.
I mean, I enjoy Shaman King more than One Piece, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, actually.
But yeah, I guess we should wrap up here, then.
Alright, so, yeah, Volume 6 and 7 were mostly fights, and conclusion to one fight, start with another, more Tao Ren, if you liked it. This oversized coat, which I'm never gonna get. And, you know, go ahead.
No, it was. I just thought of a really bad joke. I said earlier he's like, he's like Vegeta, and then like also, because you know, with like fandom and stuff, there's always shipping. I know that people ship him and Horohoro. They both get with the blue haired person.
I hate you. No.
Yeah, let's get out of here. So, Marion, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter. Not that I use it that much these days. Oh, no. At Microwavy, the E before the V. I co-host a bunch of other podcasts. They're all in my card, which I have on a pinned tweet and also linked in my bio on my Twitter. That's Microwavy, E before the V. And I also write reviews for my personal blog, heavensdoorknob.wordpress.com, and for Sakaki's blog, wsstalkback.blogspot.com. Sometimes I'll write editorials for Toonami Faithful at toonamifaithful.com. But yeah, I've mostly been writing for Sakaki recently. I got some more review copies from Viz. Pog. Yeah, my most recent one that I'm really proud of is the Mermaid Saga. So check that out if you like Rumiko Takahashi. Because I'm not like... Okay, like, I read, like, half of Ranma, and that's most of my exposure to her. I've seen, like, one-off episodes of Inuyasha, but I don't really keep up with her work like that. So it's been really fun, like, going through her catalog as Viz brings out, like the classics or whatever on their SIG line. So, yeah. Check out the reviews. It was fun.
Awesome. And Sakaki, where can people find you?
Well, as Marion just said, the aforementioned wssblogspot.com and wsstalkback at wsstalkback on Twitter. As Marion said, they write reviews for, and I welcome anybody, you know, who's got any interest in Shonen Sunday. Doesn't have to be something currently running. It could have run 20 years ago. If you love it and it ran, and it's a Shogakukan related thing, especially Shonen Sunday, come to us. We would love to hear from you. Because right now, I don't know where it is right now, but we actually just reached 5,200. I'm just like, how? How did this happen? Like, now we're slowly trying to work with just the magazine. We're doing the table of contents. So, you know, I know people see those a lot for Jump, where the authors talk about stuff. I mean, it's a little different with Shogakukan, but I won't go into that here. We're now doing those, so that's a thing to look out for. And, of course, news and other stuff from Shonen Sunday. As well, I do write for Toonami Faithful. I haven't read the last thing I wrote about One. Yeah, One and One Punch Man. Then, of course, there's a Demon Slayer podcast. And then you can find me on my regular Twitter, at Kiro. But, yeah, I'm there as well.
Tweet about World Trigger again.
I'm about to do that. Actually, I mean, at some point, once I'm caught up with World Trigger, I probably give Black Clover a try. So,
oh, I'll my goodness.
About oh, that. Oh, yes.
I will be tweeting about that. I think I've been unfairly hard on this series, so I kind of want to get back out there and be like, okay, these are things I actually enjoy about it. So, But yeah, that's when I get caught up to World Trigger, which is a slow process, but getting faster because I love it and I'm like breezing good now.
I love when I'm right.
Which is always, so you always have love.
Hashtag Marion is always right.
As long as you're aware.
Oh, Hailer King.
Not to sound cocky, but yeah.
But yeah, definitely follow both of these guys. They are both awesome people. And you should give them some love. But if you're interested in what I do, you can follow me on Twitter at VLordGTZ. I'm usually on there talking about whatever I'm doing, which is mainly reading manga and not sleeping and staying up in the middle of the night. But you can find my manga-focused reviews and editorials over on all-comic.com and TanamiFaithful.com, respectively. I have a lot of reviews coming out. I have definitely a hefty backlog that I have to burn through that I haven't really been making much progress on lately. So we're going to probably change that. But aside from that, I'm occasionally streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/VLGTZ. I also occasionally stream certain things on the Tanami Faithful Twitch as well. So you can check out that as well. We usually tweet that out on Tanami News. But as far as podcasts go, I do three podcasts. As Marion and Sakaki have mentioned, we all do the Demon Slayer podcast, which can be found on Twitter at DSlayerPodcast. And then I also do a kind of more general anime and manga-focused podcast called the Dumb Weebs Podcast, which is on Twitter at DumbWeebsPod. But as far as the Shaman King podcast is concerned, you can find us on Twitter at Shaman King Pod. And you can just check there for whenever the new episodes of the podcast come out or just various updates that we give. But you can also listen to the podcast on basically every podcast platform out there at this point. Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, you name it, we're there. So just go to your podcast platform of choice, subscribe, and enjoy our episodes. But that does it for this episode, so we will see you guys later.
See ya. And remember, the soul is always with you.
Amida bye-bye.
Soul always with you sounds way too close to force will always be with you.